So tonight I'm going to talk about equanimity, the quality of being equanimous. Equanimous is the adjective form that's a little less common. And equanimity is one of the four properties that Buddhism calls the four unlimited minds. There's loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And these are unlimited in the sense that they're you could think of them as doors that we can walk through, and they take us from the limits of our ego, outside of the limits of our ego, to our true nature. All of them are ways that we get in touch with our true nature more, and they're beyond the limits of the ego. And so equanimity, it's a powerful state. And I would say that, modern life predisposes us to misunderstand it in some ways. And so to talk about that, I'm going to start with a quote from T.S. Eliot. He said, "There are three conditions that seem alike, yet differ completely. Attachment to people and self and things. Detachment from people, from self, and from things. And growing between them, indifference, resembling the others as death resembles life." And so what he's saying is that the mode of going through the world with tremendous attachment, tremendous passionate energy, there's a lot of vitality in that. Now, Buddhism tells us that if we go through the world with tremendous passion, tremendous attachment, that attachment is going to lead to suffering. And in fact, even anecdotally, it's not hard to see that people who have very passionate lives often aren't, you know, completely on an even keel in terms of happiness. But there is tremendous vitality in that. And in detachment, which is very close to what Buddhism calls equanimity, there's also tremendous vitality in that. But unlike either a passionate life or a detached life of equanimity, indifference does not have vitality to it. And with indifference, we could put in there resignation, numbing out, all these sorts of things. We live in a culture that has a lot of trouble with vulnerability. And there's all kinds of forces, both some in conventional religion, some in the corporate world, which really discourage vulnerability. They discourage deep feeling. And so there's this idea that, you know, from a perspective of the Puritans or a puritanical perspective, that a person who is passionate and full of desires, that's a bad person, but a person who's completely repressed and numbed out is a good person, you know? And there's a certain amount of control associated with numbing oneself out. You know, in other words, if I can be numb and not really feel, you know, be kind of thick-skinned and not really hurt when somebody insults me or not really knocked off by any, you know, desires or unpredictability of life, I have a certain amount of control. It's not the vitality of healthy self-control, it's more a repressive control, but it passes for equanimity in the world. In other words, as the way it looks on the outside is the person's always on an even keel, you know? And so being on an even keel or not having one's feathers ruffled, you know, these could be descriptions of actual equanimity, but they're also descriptions of just people who are sort of repressed, cut off, not feeling their deep sensitivity, not feeling their vulnerability. And so equanimity is actually something very different from that. Buddhism really asks us to feel the world fully. And ultimately, the teaching is that we find the most happiness in saying yes to all of life, to the full experience of life. And so equanimity is someone who would feel some, and I'm not going to claim that I'm in perfect equanimity, but someone who's in Buddha-like equanimity would be feeling absolutely everything. All the desires, all the fears, all the pains, all the frustrations, everything, and remaining at peace with that. Now that's an incredibly hard state, and that's incredibly, that's much, much harder than just numbing out, but that's really what equanimity is. And so I have a quote sheet. I often have quote sheets for these talks. So the first quote is a little more detail on that T.S. Eliot quote, which I won't read, but if you're a T.S. Eliot fan, there it is. From the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the great Hindu scriptures, it's the scripture on which Gandhi based his life. Perform all thy actions with mind concentrated on the divine, renouncing attachment and looking upon success and failure with equal eye. Spirituality implies equanimity. So again, very easy to say, very hard to do. Not attached at all to success and failure. Marcus Aurelius, who was emperor of Rome as well as a very wise philosopher, one of the closest things we've ever had to a true philosopher king on earth. You always own the option of having no opinion. There's never any need to get worked up or to trouble your soul about things you can't control. These things are not asking to be judged by you. Leave them alone. Very practical.
Very wise words.
Very wise words. From the philosopher Blaise Pascal, philosopher and mathematician. The sensitivity of men to small matters and their indifference to great ones indicates a strange inversion. And it is funny, it's something very human about how we'll get worked up about the tiniest little details, but then we'll be ignoring big picture things. From Carl Jung, even a happy life cannot be without a measure of darkness, and the word happy would lose its meaning if it were not balanced by sadness. It is far better to take things as they come, along with patience and equanimity. From Ramana Maharshi, we actually have a little picture of him here on the altar. Willpower should be understood to be the strength of the mind, which makes it capable of meeting success and failure with equanimity. Is it not synonymous with certain success? Why should one's attempts always be attended by success? Success breeds arrogance, and men's spiritual progress is thus arrested. Failure, on the other hand, is beneficial, inasmuch as it opens his eyes to his limitations and prepares him to surrender himself. Self-surrender is synonymous with eternal happiness. Again, easier to say than to live out, but an interesting perspective. From Jean Klein, what is important is neither pleasure nor pain, success nor failure. What is important is to understand that neither of them have any importance whatsoever. This understanding calls for peace, calm, and serenity. From the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel, because of indifference, one dies before one actually dies. From His Holiness the Dalai Lama, with equanimity, you can deal with situations with calm and reason while keeping your inner happiness. Pema Chodron, to cultivate equanimity, we practice catching ourselves when we feel attraction or aversion before it hardens into grasping or negativity. And so that's a very interesting one, that if we sort of we catch it in the moment, it's almost like wet cement as opposed to dry cement. It doesn't have a chance to harden. Sylvia Boorstein says, mindfulness meditation doesn't change life. Life remains as fragile and as unpredictable as ever. Meditation changes the heart's capacity to accept life as it is. And so that, it's so different from our American perspective, which is about fixing the external, this whole idea that we can actually become okay with the way the world actually is. From Neil Donald Walsh, when you know that everything happens to the best, then everything that happens is okay with you. The irony of this is that when everything happens is okay with you, you set up an energy field of equanimity and harmony with the universe, that the universal law of attraction draws more equanimity and harmony into your life. From John Kabat-Zinn, mindfulness practice means that we commit fully in each moment to be present, inviting ourselves to interface with this moment in full awareness with the intention to embody as best we can an orientation of calmness, mindfulness, and equanimity right here and right now. This great one from Jack Kornfield. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference or callousness. We may appear serene if we say, I'm not attached, it doesn't matter what happens anyway, because it's all transitory. We feel a certain peaceful relief because we withdraw from experience and from the energies of life. But indifference is based on fear. True equanimity is not a withdrawal. It is a balanced engagement with all aspects of life. It is opening to the whole of life with composure and ease of mind, accepting the beautiful and terrifying nature of all things. Equanimity embraces the loved and the unloved, the agreeable and disagreeable, the pleasure and the pain. It eliminates clinging and aversion. The teacher, Sharon Salzberg. Sometimes people in abusive situations think they're responsible for the other person's happiness or that they're going to fix them and make them feel better. The practice of equanimity teaches us that it's not up to you to make somebody else happy. From The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. There is a huge amount of freedom that comes to you when you take nothing personally. Very simple. Anne Lamott says, gratitude, not understanding, is the secret of joy and equanimity. And it's true that the practice of gratitude is an astonishingly powerful practice. From Amit Ray, equanimity is the hallmark of spirituality. It is neither chasing nor avoiding, but just being in the middle. This person, Michael Benner, apparently in a book, Fearless Intelligence, emotions are like water, turning opaque when disturbed, yet transparent when still. As mindfulness calms our emotions, we can peer into their depths and see our overshadowing spiritual values reflected on the surface. And then the final word from the Beatles, for well you know that it's a fool who plays it cool by making his world a little colder.